What we're going to do for the rest of the morning is to get an introduction to the textbook. I know that many of you might not have had a chance to read it all yet. I am going to be talking principally from chapter 1 today, might touch on chapter 2 a little bit. Really, I just wanted to start with some of the essential terminology in chemistry, because let me just double check. How many of you have had some kind of chemistry before? Okay, so I'm assuming that you all had either junior high or high school, some form of chemistry. So if you know the answers to these questions, just go ahead and shout out. Let's start with the fundamental one. What is an atom? You could say a building block of matter. Comes from a Greek word which means indivisible, uncuttable. Tome, if you think of tonsillectomy, that tome and tonsillectomy means to cut out. So tonsillectomy is to cut out your tonsils. Atome means something uncuttable. So it's the idea that it's the smallest unit of normal matter. To be a little bit more specific about it, though, it is the smallest unit of matter which retains the properties of a chemical element. Which, of course, leads right to our next term, an element. You've probably heard of the periodic table of elements, but what is an element? Yes? Okay, so an element is a specific type of atom. With a fixed number of protons, which leads yet to another term, which to help us out, I'm going to draw a picture here. It's an incorrect picture of the atom, but it's the simplest picture I can draw. Because in essential atomic structure, we can talk about three types of particles. And we can also talk about what is known as the nucleus. The nucleus is the core of an atom that contains two types of particles. Can anybody tell me what those particles are? Proton, yes. Which is something that is positively charged. What else is in there? Neutrons, that's right. Which, as the name sounds, it's something that's neutral, which means it doesn't have any charge. That's why its existence wasn't confirmed until the 1930s. Then that's the center of an atom. It makes up only a tiny fraction of the volume of an atom. The rest of it is taken up by these other particles, which are what? Electrons, that's right. Which have negative charge. It's the fact that electrons are negatively charged, protons are positively charged, that keep the electrons around that nucleus. So an element is based off of the number of protons that that atom has. Now, jumping ahead a little bit, you can have a series of atoms that are all part of the same element, but they might have different numbers of neutrons. We're not going to explore that topic any further at the moment because I'll start getting too complicated too fast. But the main identity, what shows up on this periodic table with all these symbols, It all depends on the number of protons. So for example, if you can see from where you're sitting, upper left-hand corner of this table, you see the letter H. That is the chemical symbol that stands for hydrogen. In that box on the upper right-hand corner is the number 1, which is the number of protons that that element has. And as you can look, most of the rest of the table goes in numerical order, although there are a few gaps, which we can get to why there are some gaps later on. But the identity of an element is entirely determined by the number of protons. So an element, again, is a specific type of atom with a fixed number of protons. An atom would be the smallest unit of that element, which would always consist of a nucleus of some sort and then a certain number of electrons. Okay. What is a substance? That might not be one that you've had a formal definition before. Well, a substance is a form of matter with a consistent chemical formula, which, in case you're not familiar with what that means, a chemical formula is a list of the number and type number and types of atoms in a substance. So I guess it's a little bit of a circular reference. But in other words, it would be something like water. Hopefully you are familiar with the fact, or you might have heard the fact before, that water has the formula H2O. So what does that mean? It means there's a hydrogen on either side of oxygen that is attached to that oxygen. This is a depiction of a molecule of water that is somewhat incomplete. And I don't want to confuse you by doing this, but to make it more complete, I'm putting some dots around that oxygen. We're going to learn later on how to read those structures, but just to give you an introduction, the dots refer to electrons that are floating around just the oxygen. The lines between the letters represent bonds, electrons that are being used to hold atoms together. So in water, the chemical formula is H2O, which means in every unit of water, there are two hydrogens and an oxygen. So a substance is something that has the same chemical formula throughout. That could be something like hydrogen peroxides, in pure form. Because, let's get some terminology before I get to that. If we have the idea of a substance and a formula, what is a compound? Yes. Good guess. Needs a slight change in terminology. It's something that contains two or more elements combined together. So a compound is a substance that contains two or more different elements. So water is an example of a compound because it has both hydrogen and oxygen. Now, you can have two atoms, like the oxygen we breathe doesn't just exist as oxygen atoms, it exists as pairs of oxygens. So we would write the formula O2. But O2 would not be a compound because it's only one type of atom. So let me write this out as an example. So water is a compound because it contains two different elements. Hydrogen and oxygen. Oxygen, which has the formula O2, is not a compound. Because although it contains more than one atom, it only contains one type of element. Now, the answer that was given earlier to the question, what is a compound? The first answer I got was a combination of two or more substances. There is a term that we use to describe exactly that, a mixture. That's right. So a mixture is a combination of two or more different substances. So an example I almost mentioned earlier, and then I realized I hadn't given you the vocabulary yet, is hydrogen peroxide. Purchased at the grocery store, is a mixture of two substances. Hydrogen peroxide itself which has the formula H2O2, and water, which I've already said has the formula H2O. The fact that you can have different compounds that contain the same elements but in different proportions is a concept coming up in one of our later chapters known as the law of multiple proportions. So I'm just pointing out, yes, you can have completely different substances that contain the same number of atoms. In fact, even if you don't have compounds, you can have different forms of an element. So for example, breathable oxygen is O2. Does anybody know what ozone is? O3. But of course, if we breathe ozone in, that's not exactly the best thing for us. So even an element can come in different forms, which, just to mention the term out loud, those are known as allotropes. So let's see, we got atom and element, chemical formula, compound and mixture. Let's tackle a couple of tricky concepts. Can anybody tell me what a molecule is? Yes, but it's a little bit more specific in that, that are bonded together, which a bond, we're going to learn much more about what that is in a later chapter, but for right now, just assume it's some kind of formal connection between atoms. So a molecule is a set of atoms directly bonded to each other. I'll make a statement and then I'll explain it. Not all compounds are molecules, and not all molecules are compounds. What the heck do I mean by that? Well, a molecule is a set of atoms that are connected to each other. They could be the same type of atom, or they could be different types of atoms. So there are several naturally occurring elements that tend to occur as pairs. So several elements exist as molecules in their natural forms. Examples include O2, which is oxygen, H2, which is hydrogen, and N2, which is nitrogen. Those are all elements that are extremely common out in the environment. We are composed of those elements. Of course, they're in different proportions than the elements themselves, but these are the forms that they take in open atmosphere. None of these are compounds because they only contain one type of element. All of these are molecules because they're two atoms that are directly connected to each other. So these are examples of molecules that are not compounds. So all of these are examples of molecules that are not compounds. Now, what about the other part of that statement I made, that not all compounds are molecules? Does anybody know what sodium chloride is? Normal table salt. Anybody know what sodium chloride looks like if you zoom in way down on it with a microscope? What was that? Has a crystal form. Does anybody know what form it's in? It's a cube. Oh, great internet. Can you show me a picture of a sodium chloride crystal? And can I find it quickly? There we go. So there's a single sodium chloride cube. Does anybody have any idea why sodium chloride tends to make cube crystals like this? Yes. It's a way that the atoms are all arranged with each other, which if I could... I don't need to switch back to the written notes. There it is right there. There is the arrangement of sodium and chlorine that you have in sodium chloride, table salt. But look at the way that these are all arranged. You have a sodium that's next to a chlorine, that's next to a sodium, that's next to a chlorine, that's next to a sodium, indefinitely in all directions. So unlike what the lines can kind of show here, they're not all directly bonded to each other. They're all attracted to each other because positive and negative charges attract. So we write the lines in just to highlight they're arranged in a cubic arrangement, but they don't have the same types of bonds like what you see in the molecules of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen. Later on, we're going to have some more concrete terminology that will help us with this discussion. In things like hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, we have what are called covalent bonds, which is where the atoms really are directly connected just to each other. In a substance like this, we have what are referred to as ionic bonds, which for a beginning chemistry student gives you an incorrect picture that all these things are directly connected. But instead, it's just the fact they're oppositely charged that brings them all together. So let me copy into the notes the essential structure of what sodium chloride looks like. So the color choices I'm using are random, but let's say that if I make sodium red, I tend to associate red with positive charge just for years of using batteries. And if I say blue is negatively charged, which means chlorine, which, I'm forgetting, you're beginning chemistry students. This is the way that we would normally show charges on elements. We write it as a superscript, a bit of text that goes above the normal line of text, and we write it to the right-hand side of the elemental symbol, which I guess I should write down what the phrase element symbol means in just a moment. But if we can work with this for right now, then what we have is we have sodium and chlorine that alternate positions in a cubic fashion. So give me a moment just to draw this out. And again, the lines that I'm drawing in here are not true bond lines. They're just trying to show something about the structure of this substance. So to summarize what I've said, the atoms in sodium chloride, which has the formula NaCl, because there is one sodium for each chlorine. The atoms in sodium chloride are not directly bonded to each other. So sodium chloride does not exist as molecules. So you can still see the sentence at the top of the previous, or the bottom of the previous page here. Not all compounds are molecules. Water is a molecule because hydrogens are directly connected to oxygen. But we just seen this example of sodium chloride that is not a molecule, but it is a compound because it has more than one type of element in it. So not all compounds are molecules. And not all molecules are compounds. Again, to refer to these examples, we have oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, fluorine, chlorine, bromine, iodine, that are molecules, but they're all the same type of atom, so they're not compounds. Now, I've thrown a lot of terminology out in the last few minutes, so does anyone have any questions about any of the terms that I've used so far? So, because I used the phrase but didn't write a definition down yet, let me write a definition for elemental symbol. It is a 1, 2, or 3-letter abbreviation used to specify a specific element. So, for example, hydrogen has one proton, always has one proton, and that one proton type of atom always is called hydrogen. Now, many of the names of the periodic table have abbreviations that are logical based off of their name. So, boron is B, carbon is C, nitrogen is N. So why is sodium Na? Latin, natrium. So Na of natrium, that's where that comes from. Gold, aurum, A-U. When you have a problem with your pipes in your house, what do you call? A plumber. So why is PB the symbol for lead on the periodic table?
It's like
Yes, which wasn't the best thing for them because we know now that lead is toxic. But yes, lead is a very malleable, which means manipulable material. So pipes were made out of lead. That lead was called plumbum, which is where we get the word plumber from. So I could tell more stories like that. There's another chapter where we get more into that. But since I've introduced the periodic table, and since I'm writing these chemicals down, if you've never learned chemistry before, you might be saying, well, why is sodium not called SO? Because its name comes from a different language. Now, let me just take a look at the book here to see where have I jumped around. Oh, yes. Okay, I did a couple of simple terms. Coming back to the idea of mixtures, I mentioned about hydrogen peroxide, like what you would buy at the grocery store. Hydrogen peroxide is what is known as a homogeneous mixture. If some of you have had chemistry before, you might know how to define this term. What would be a homogeneous mixture? It's a mixture that the composition's the same throughout. That's correct. Can anybody add to that? Because it's not wrong, but there's a little more to it. It's a mixture where the components cannot be physically separated. So, for example, to give you another example, if you put sugar into water or salt into water, you have salt water. Unless you do something like evaporate out water, unless you do some other kind of process to it, there's no way to get that salt back out of water. There's no way to get that sugar out of the water. They're completely mixed together and indistinguishable in any part of that mixture. So that's what a homogeneous mixture is. It's a mixture that has the same composition throughout. Which that part of it, if you're not careful, sounds like the definition of a substance. Because I said a substance is something that has the same chemical formula throughout. But it's specifically, in this case, a mixture that has the same composition throughout. And the components of the mixture cannot be easily separated. An example there is something like salt water. Contrasting with that, we have a heterogeneous mixture, which if you've not had any science course, these prefixes homo and hetero show up all over the place. Homo means same, hetero means different, so homogeneous means same kind. Heterogeneous means different kinds. So heterogeneous mixture. Or can anybody give me an example of one? Yes? Oil and water. They're going to separate out easily. How about sand and water? If you've ever built sand, that sand, but then the components will separate out. How about milk before it's processed? Now, if you leave it alone, you get the cream out and you get the rest of the milk, which means that's a heterogeneous mixture. So a heterogeneous mixture is a mixture that has varying composition throughout, and the components can be easily separated. So The example I usually use here is sand in water. Does anyone have any questions so far? All right. Let's move on to something more number-based, because we've, despite how long we've been talking about this, we've only covered a very another major chapter one has to deal with measurement, and it has to do with the metric system. So the metric system is the system that is most frequently used in science because it's a measurement system based on tens. If you think about the imperial system, what's often referred to as the imperial system that we use here in the U.S., we've got 12 inches in a foot, we've got 3 feet in a yard, 5,280 feet in a mile. If you go to different places in the globe, there are many more historical sets of units that might have all kinds of oddball numbers that go with them. For example, if you're from the UK, you might know what a stone is, which is what? 14 pounds, that's right. We have the word dozen, which is 12. So I could come up with more examples, but the point is the metric system is nothing like that. It's all a decimal system. It's a system based on powers of 10. Now, there are certain what are called fundamental units of measure. So things that measure length or mass, which, OMG, I forgot to mention that before we got to this. There's a difference between the terms mass and weight. So what is the term mass? That is the amount of matter. In an object. What is weight? So to keep it simple, because we're not in physics class, it's the effect of gravity on mass. Which means it is a type of force, effectively. So it's hard to get the word out of the language, even when we go up to lab. I might end up saying a phrase like, well, we need to go weigh this out. Which, that's the wrong way to say it. We need to know how much mass this thing has. Everything in chemistry has to do with mass, how much matter, not how much weight there is. So, okay, now I can go to talking about fundamental units of length, time, mass, and temperature. So, what is the standard metric unit for length? It's the meter, which is abbreviated lowercase m. What about for mass? So there is this term gram, which you might have learned that's the fundamental unit. In terms of standard metric units, it is what's known as the kilogram. Kg. So kilo, that is a prefix that means 1,000. So it is 1,000 grams. You might say, well, if you have the word gram, why is the standard unit a kilogram? Because a gram is kind of a tiny amount of stuff. So the physicists, whoever came up with it, decided it was better to use the kilogram as the essential unit. What about time? The second, abbreviated S, and then temperature. Celsius is related, but it's not the fundamental unit. Kelvin, which we're going to run out of time before I can talk about temperature scales today, but the Kelvin is the fundamental metric unit. There are some other units. There's the ampere, which has to do with current. There's the candela, which has to do with light. And then there's one we're going to get later on, which is the mole. But we'll tackle the mole in a completely different lecture. Not to run out of time here, but just to tell a story, the definitions of a meter and a kilogram have very recently changed. I don't know if you follow the news at all, but I think it was just within the last year that we've come up with a new definition of a kilogram is. Because do you know what the old definition of a kilogram was? There's this hunk of metal sitting inside a glass jar, inside a glass jar, inside a glass jar, inside a vault somewhere outside of Paris, yes. And that was the kilogram, which means every once in a rare while, they would roll it out, carefully compare it to other standards that they made against it, and then every device on the planet was measured against that kilogram. Similar story as far as what a meter was. A meter stick was just that. In fact, there's a couple of places in Paris left where you can see street signs that they've got this bar that's the meter. Because to give a little historical context, during the French Revolution, there was this drive to throw off all of the old systems, not just in terms of religion or monarchy, but also in the growing field of science. In France, there were all these different measurement systems. There wasn't even just one. Different parts of the country had different measurement systems. And so they established this new decimal system. And so they'd put up bars in the streets of Paris saying, here is the meter. And apparently there's a couple places you can still go to find them. So recently, these things have been redefined based off of atomic measurements. So that's sort of a side story. Now, just to tell you where we're going to be going next time, I hear the ruffling of papers, but I got 3 minutes left, and I'm going to use them. So you can see there are these fundamental units of measure, but they're also what we call the metric prefixes. Which I'll explain more about them later, but there's only a handful that I'm going to make you memorize. And yes, that means you're going to have to memorize some of these. Although, if you've dealt with computers at all, you know this first one. Mega, which means what? What is a mega something? Oh, so you all talk about megabytes but don't know what a mega is. It's a million. Abbreviated capital M. How about kilo? Well, you got that one already. It's a thousand. Abbreviated small k. Going to the small side of things, deci with a C. Close. It's 1/10 or 0.1, lowercase d. Centi. That's the one that's 1/100, lowercase c, like centimeter. Milli. A thousandth, millimeter. There's two more you got to know. Micro, which to change numbers on you, I'm going to use a power of 10. 10 to the negative 6, which means 1/1,000,000. We use the Greek lowercase mu to represent micro. And the last one for today, nano. You might hear the phrase nanotechnology thrown around. Nano means 10 to the negative 9th, which gets us down to the scale of atoms. We've now run out of time. If any of you did have any questions, I'll be after class. I have office hours located in room SC1214, which is right upstairs from here. Towards the end of the building that faces the parking lot. On Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, my office hours are 1:30 to 2:20. On Mondays, it's 11:30 to 12:20. And on Fridays, it's 9:30 to 10:20.